Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's sein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
I think we are live.
Yeah, we are live. I'm just waiting for the room to fill up a little bit.
So how far were you into your preparations for your holidays? I should probably let listeners know that this is all technically your fault, because after we recorded the podcast last night, you said to me, I'm going skiing for 5 days unless something big happens and I'll have to run back to my desk. And things basically can't get much bigger than this, so I'm basically blaming you for this.
Well, in fairness, I have a wonderful colleague in Daniel Bush, and he'd got the story up already. So I am mostly packed. I'm supposed to drive to the, well, first to the ferry, go to the mainland, and then up to Whistler in a few hours. So the timing of this is actually quite good.
Oh, well, that's fine. As long as you don't get to ruin your holiday, or else Borussia Dortmund would have been getting a very stern and angry email from Transfermarkt.
Tomorrow would have been problematic. There would have been no way. But today is okay. I got to say, too, I kind of thought that we would get a response today where he was going. I have to be quite honest. I spoke to some sources yesterday, and they said to me that Dortmund are talking to him. But when I heard his demands of 12 to 15 million euros, I thought, okay, well, this is not going to happen.
Yeah, we were kind of, we kind of got this news at the same time, didn't we? Because we both finished recording the podcast, and then I spoke to someone as well who knows things very well about it. And, you know, I'd go so far as to possibly say, has been in discussions with Sula and his agent. They told me what his demands were. And that's which is why I put up that piece today, basically saying he wants 12 to 50 million euros. And as a result, and what I was told, that blows any Bundesliga side out of the water. We talked about in the podcast last night that, you know, maybe Leipzig, if they really wanted to just kind of properly make a statement. But in terms of Dortmund, it seemed like too much money, but it's now looking as though he's probably going to make about 10 million euros a year at Dortmund. So
it's more.
Yeah.
It's more. I asked. That number is not correct. He's getting what he demanded at Bayern.
Well, there we go then, which is really quite something, isn't it? We should probably start. Should we just go straight into what this means for Dortmund first then?
Yeah, I think we have quite a few listeners. Yeah, here's. I think we should about get started with this show. What does that mean? I mean, you wrote down the pointers, right? And what does that mean for Dortmund? I think it's very significant and a really big response to what has been going on for quite some time. I mean, yesterday, we saw how much trouble this defense is in. And this has not been the first time. I think yesterday just showed how big the problem was. And then on top of that, I spoke to a couple of people doing the research about Süle, and then one source said to me, like, oh, Manuel Akanji has turned down his last two contract offers. So at that stage, I was like, okay, well, they really need to do something in at center back, right? If I say I knew that Dortmund were going to announce Süle today, I would be lying. I am surprised by it in some ways and shocked, but at the same time, it makes a ton of sense. They're getting one of the best German available center backs in the world. And they're getting him on a free transfer, although at a significant sign-on, I guess, and of course, also a high salary. But it is the position that they needed to do something at, right? No other position in the squad has bigger issues. And I think in that regard, they basically identified the best possible available player and they went out and got him. And I think that is such a remarkable thing from a club that usually sees their best players leave to go somewhere else because someone else is doing exactly what they just did. And I think for Dortmund, we were talking yesterday, Dortmund needs some sort of Frank Ribéry moment on the Gegenpressing podcast, right? Like finally bring in a player who is not just a product or keep one of their best players, but kind of make a statement signing. I think this is a statement signing, Stefan.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I was actually trying to think of the last time that Dortmund maybe signed a player from Bayern who Bayern wanted to keep and really struggling. I mean, I thought maybe Mats Hummels back in the day, but then he was a youth player who Bayern weren't particularly crazy about. I know there's possibly been players in the past who Dortmund have beaten Bayern to the signing of. But you know, it's monumental, not only in a very real immediate sense for Dortmund and for Bayern, but it's a big moment for the Bundesliga, where a lot of the people who now follow the league, who came along within the last 10 years, they've watched Dortmund get dismantled by Bayern Munich, that famous Jurgen Klopp side, and the way that certain players have moved on when they've hit certain peaks. You've now got Dortmund being very aggressive in the market, potentially pushing beyond their own wage bill or beyond their own wage salary bill to bring in a player of this magnitude. And there's no denying that it's a player who Bayern Munich wants to keep. So it's huge. It's I think it immediately improves Dortmund's defence. It's a galvanising moment for the club and for the fans. I said on the podcast last night, I think, I can't remember if I said this on the podcast, if I said this before or after it, but I said it'd be really good politics if someone at Dortmund leaked this story right after the Bayern, the Leverkusen game.
Well, that's exactly what happened.
Well, you know, and I think also a large part of it was that the cat was largely out of the bag when, so anyone who maybe doesn't know, Süle's agent was on Sport Eins over the weekend and he basically confirmed that, yes, he's leaving. He's already decided where he's going. He dismissed the fact that it could be Newcastle and... You know, once you get to that point, it's only a matter of time before someone lets slip what's going on. So it does make sense that after something like that happened, you know, Dortmund very quickly had to kind of take control of the situation, make the announcement. And yeah, now we're all talking about Dortmund getting one over Bayern rather than getting thumped off by Leverkusen, which is good news for Dortmund. But yeah. On the whole, I think it's a great signing for Bayern, for Dortmund rather. Terrible move for Bayern. He goes into that team potentially as their best central defender. I know Kanji's got talent and he's got potential. He could develop into a great player. Mats Hummels has experience, but that's exactly the player that Dortmund have been crying out for. Now they just have to get a decent defensive midfielder and then we might have something resembling a title challenge next season.
Yeah, I also think that he's the first of two signings Stefan, in center back. I tweeted this out yesterday and I said, well, Dortmund should do everything in their power to go after Niklas Süle and Matthias Ginter, sign them both on a free. Well, that's 50% done, right? I'm not saying Ginter is done as well, but I'm pretty sure they're going to go for another center back and bring in another center back, because if Manuel Akanji doesn't want to renew his contract, they will probably sell him because they're going to still get money. What I'm curious about, and we were talking about this yesterday in the show, that Dortmund needs some sort of moment where they say they're not developing a player and then sell him on, but where they actually either bring in a big name or they actually keep one of their big names. And I think Süle is kind of that guy. I think where it becomes interesting now, what will do this to the rest of the squad? What will do this to Erling Haaland and his future? Is he going to say, oh, wow, this is a great move. This is the sort of player that we need. Maybe I'll stick around for another year. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. The Erling Haaland thing is really interesting, because when you do watch him on and off the pitch, and it was evident again on Sunday in the Leverkusen game, the guy's completely hardwired into the squad right now. You know, he's been asked and asked about potentially if he's going to come, if he's going to stay. He seems to get quite annoyed when the topic comes up, not in the sense like that, you know, he wants to keep things hush-hush. It's almost as if he doesn't even want to contemplate it. He just wants to get on with the football. We've kind of spoken this in the podcast before. I think if he's determined to move to Real Madrid, it's not happening this summer. So, you know, I know this goes back and forth a lot, but I've actually, the way I see it right now is that unless he makes a move to England, he's actually probably going to end up staying for another summer, which would make sense as to why he would maybe look at this signing and think, well, this is fantastic news. It gives us an even better chance of going on and challenging for proper titles next season. It'd be interesting to see what it means for the defence as well, because, you know, you've also got guys there like Mats Hummels, Kanji, Zagadou, whoever else, probably wondering, well, what does this do for my situation? As you said, I think probably another central defender is still necessary. Obviously, Schlotterbeck is the one who's been, you know, referenced a lot. He's a young, exciting German defender, probably one that's going to probably cost about 25, 30 million euros in the summer. If Akanji walks out the door and then he comes in, then I don't really think Dortmund fans would be particularly too bored about it. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, part of me does wonder if this is almost kind of like Dortmund getting their ducks in the row before they have to go on and sell someone like Haaland. You know, we've seen them being linked with midfielders and forwards. Schlotterbeck was one who was largely linked, and he's going to cost a lot of money as well. So, you know, and of course, Niklas Süle is not exactly... The thing about these kind of deals is that even though it's a free transfer, his arrival will still cost a significant amount of money for Dortmund. So whether that's in terms of sign-on fee or what else it means for the increased wage bills. So this will probably have ramifications as to what happens in the summer, but it's certainly good news. It's at the end of the day, it's a sign of intent, isn't it? It's a sign that Dortmund are ready to kind of lock horns with Bayern. They're ready to, you know, really slide in there and take advantage of things when Bayern start wobbling a wee bit. And we can go on to talk about Bayern in a moment, what this means for them, but it does suggest that things aren't all...
Yeah, no, exactly. I think this is probably the interest. Yeah, I just lost you there for just a second, buddy. But I think we should maybe move before we open the floor to the listeners. I see a ton of requests. Don't worry, I see them. Bear with me there, please. I do want to talk about what that does mean for Bayern Munich. And I mean, they have known that Süle is going to leave for quite some time. I don't think they have not too much bothered about him going to Dortmund. I think they're bothered about the fact that he's leaving, for sure. They definitely wanted to keep him. I've seen some people on Twitter suggest that they didn't want to keep him anyways. Well, I'm sorry, but that's absolute nonsense. If you're thinking that, you haven't followed this narrative at all. Nagelsmann wouldn't play him in a game like yesterday's game if he didn't have any sort of intent of keeping him. The club very much went to the limit to sign him to a new deal. And I think for them, he's leaving quite a big hole. And it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to fill it, right? I mean, a couple of names that come to mind and that we have been discussing on the podcast before. One of them is Antonio Rüdiger from Chelsea, and the other one is Christensen, also from Chelsea. Those are two names that have been heavily linked. So I guess for Bayern Munich, this is now, they have certainty. I think it will be interesting to see what they're going to do with Süle for the rest of the season. Of course, for them, I think the title is more or less wrapped up. There's no, I think 9 points is just too big to overcome for Borussia Dortmund at this stage. I think it was quite telling for Bayern Munich that yesterday they announced that Manuel Neuer was getting a meniscus operation. The timing of that is significant because, of course, that gets him back fit in time for just after the Salzburg Champions League game, right? For when really heats up for Bayern Munich. Their focus has completely shifted to that. But I think for Bayern right now, Stefan, for them, it's all about finding a replacement. And I think that the two targets that we've mentioned are probably the on the very top of the shopping list.
Yeah, this is really interesting for Bayern because you've got a situation where they've lost a key player. And like you said, there's a lot of debate over how good Niklas Süle actually is because of the nature of his injuries over the course of the years, which has led to him a lack of game time. I think a lot of people possibly look at his career at Bayern Munich on paper and assume he didn't play because he wasn't very good, but it's quite the opposite. It's because of injuries. And although he maybe wasn't in the squad much last season when he was still trying to regain his fitness, it's worth bearing in mind that Julian Nagelsmann has more or less played him and started him whenever he could this season. So we're talking about a player of that quality. And it's really interesting from a transfer point of view because you have a situation at Bayern right now where there's a kind of changing of the guard. You've obviously got Oliver Kahn coming in as CEO. Saliamovic has been there for a while now. But, you know, he's still coming to terms with how to do the job properly. There's been a fair lot of criticism over the last couple of years as to the players he's been bringing in. Obviously, butted heads quite famously with Hansi Flick. And, you know, that situation kind of neatly fixed itself when Flick decided to go take on the Germany job. I'm really intrigued to see how that would have worked out in the end if that opportunity hadn't come up and Flick had stayed on at Bayern. So that's kind of been a problem that's been kind of brushed under the carpet and conveniently forgotten about. But, you know, even if we just narrow in on the defence right now, we're talking about over the course of 12 months, you're going to have Jerome Boateng leaving, David Alaba leaving, and now Niklas Süle leaving. And, you know, we can debate the merits and the qualities of each of these three players. Is Boateng still as good as he was? Possibly not. Is Niklas Süle a guaranteed starter? Possibly not. Was David Alaba as good a centre-back as he was a left-back? Possibly not. But we're still talking about three players who have huge experience at Bayern, three players that are really integral to that first team, and they've now been moved on. And if you kind of look at what's left there in that Bayern defence next summer, you've got Hernandez, who possibly the best central defender at the club right now, but he's also one who's had to really kind of redevelop himself into a central defender from, I know he played at Atletico Madrid before he joined the club, but he's been moved around a lot this season, over the time at Bayern Munich. You got Benjamin Pavard, a similar situation, a fullback slash central defender who's never really confirmed himself as a central defender at the club. And then you've got Upamecano, who, young player, bags potential, but I don't think it's unfair to say hasn't entirely proved himself at the club this season, which is probably evident from the fact that he didn't start against RB Leipzig the weekend there. So, you know, you're looking at a position or a part of that squad that is by no means settled, has no means, you know, got the players in place to kind of last the long haul for the next two or three seasons. And unlike Dortmund, perhaps, they're going to have to probably go and spend quite a lot of money in the summer because they probably need another central defender, at least one. And Bayern as a whole, Saliamovic, Oliver Kahn, whoever else, they're going to have to prove that they can kind of stem these departures, because no matter what you want to say about whether Süle was a big player, whether the Bayern wanted to keep him, they certainly didn't want to lose him. And none of this none of this process has gone along the lines of with in which Bayern were in control of things. So that's what I'm really intrigued by as to what they do in the summer, because none of this has kind of gone along to Bayern's plan, and that in itself is something that's quite unusual in German football.
Yeah, of course, the big question now is, are Bayern going to exact their revenge by signing Erling Haaland on a free transfer?
Can he play central defence?
No, but will they do it just out of spite? I don't think that they have that sort of money. That's just my thought on this. I think the other one that's going to be interesting before we open the floor, they still have Chris Richards out on loan at Hoffenheim, and he's done quite well there. So maybe he is going to be one as well who's going to come back and help fill the needs that they have at centre back. But it is an interesting one in terms of what they're going to do. And I think at this stage, they probably have to do more than one thing, because Upamecano hasn't been exactly the player that they expected he would be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Which brings a kind of great irony to all this, because Upamecano, of course, has the exact same agent as Nicolas Sulla. So he probably had a situation last summer, and I'm sure we maybe talked about it at the time, in which Nicolas Sulla has gone into training every week. So when Bayern actually obviously signed Upamecano last January, about this time last year, wasn't it? So he was obviously going into training every week at Bayern Munich, knowing fine well that the club were signing a younger, more expensive central defender. And that's possibly where this has all stemmed from. So it's a really interesting situation. Richards is an exciting young player. It'd be intriguing to see how Nagelsmann can kind of incorporate him into his squad. But I still do kind of, we've talked about this on the podcast a few times in the last couple of weeks or months, still not entirely impressed by Bayern defensively this season. You know, Nagelsmann played a very attacking team against Leipzig. He kind of laughed it off after the game, saying, look, all my attacking players are playing so well, I can't really drop any of them. But I do wonder if, reading between the lines, that's him kind of saying, I'm really struggling to get clean sheets out of this team right now. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see how Bayern do between now and the end of the season, because, of course, they've got the capacity to go and win the Champions League, and then, you know, everything's absolutely fine. But if they do end up getting knocked out and shipping a lot of goals, then there could be a huge kind of retrospective analysis of this defence, and it might come down to a lot of people saying maybe we should have actually offered Nicolas Sulla a bit more to stay put.
Yeah, possibly. Should we open the floor to some questions, Stefan? I think this is a good time to do it.
Absolutely, let's go for it.
I know there's an account here, Go Dogs. It's been asking from the very start to be invited. So let's bring him in. See how he do this. All right. You're free to speak. Shoot us your questions, Go Dogs, if you still have it.
Hi guys, thank you. Manuel, I noticed you mentioned Mats Ginter coming back to the club, but I've seen a lot of reports about Nico Schlotterbeck as the other center back that they're considering. Who else would you consider would be on their radar, as well as the idea that we also need fullbacks and some additional help in midfield as well, and wingers? So just love to get your thoughts on that. Thanks.
Yeah, I guess I'll take that first, and then you can maybe add as well. Stefan, but yeah, Schlotterbeck has been kind of rumored for some time. Same with Ginter, although I still personally think that Ginter is more likely to go to Inter Milan. That's a rumor that just doesn't want to go away. I think Schlotterbeck would be a brilliant signing. Very good player at Freiburg, right? And has really developed his game and is a national team player as well, which of course, if you have two national team players playing together, that always helps your club. It helps your country as well. And I think a very, in my opinion, a logical signing. I don't know what you think, Stefan, about Schlotterbeck, but I think that's a player who I think would fit this team really well.
Yeah, he seems to be the one that everyone's talking about. Exciting young German international, and it fits Dortmund's wheelhouse very well. I mean, I know Bayern Munich kind of have this reputation for buying up all the best players in the Bundesliga, but in fact, it's actually Dortmund that tend to be far more aggressive within the domestic market. Interestingly enough, it's a good question, but interestingly enough, I haven't actually seen a number of fullbacks being linked with Dortmund, which may be because, you know, the club are probably quite happy with Thomas Meunier, who I actually think has had a decent season so far. Rafael Guerreiro, I don't think has had a great season, but he's obviously a good player on his day. I'd actually maybe throw this back to you, Manu, and here's a name for you. What do you think about Joe Scally at Gladbach?
Joe Scally at Gladbach, oh wow, that would make get a lot of Americans excited. He's been very good, and I think Gladbach need money.
And he's a Gladbach player, so that means he will eventually be a Dortmund player. That's how it works.
Well, yeah, Gladbach and Leverkusen are Dortmund's farm teams, right? I feel like both those, Bayern and, I mean, this is a narrative that I personally think is very dumb. It gets played by the international market to a large extent that Bayern sign all the best players within the league. I think all the top Bundesliga teams all buy their best players from the teams below them. Because that's just how Germany is. And Dortmund are just as guilty, even more guilty so than Bayern is. This is, I think Süle is a funny example because they're getting a prize defender from their direct rival in this case. But it's something that's quite normal and always has been normal in this league. And Scali, of course, I think he has done so very well. And I think Dortmund are so aggressive on the US market as well that I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they would do. Yeah, and I think that is a position that they need to add something. So I guess that's an interesting one to follow.
Yeah. Should we get another question? That was a good question. Oh, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I know Pritam has been asking next, so let me bring him in. Pritam Gua. There you go. If he wants to ask.
Yeah. Pritam, your speaker's muted.
Hey, hi, guys. Sorry, I was on mute. Yeah. So you guys have been telling that Schlotterbeck is rumored with Dortmund, right? So, but what are the chances of him going to Bayern now that Dortmund has pulled one over Bayern, right? That's my question.
Yeah, it's a good question. Schlotterbeck, my understanding is, has been discussed at Bayern Munich, and they have been linked to him as well. But my thought has always been that the club wasn't 100% sure about him. Of course, this could now change. This is literally an hour after Dortmund announced Süle, right? So Bayern Munich will have to do something in that position. And it wouldn't shock me if they, of course, would go after Schlotterbeck now too. There is, of course, a history as well between Bayern and Dortmund going after a Freiburg player, and that's Sebastian Kehl. When he first joined Dortmund, he was actually already had a contract agreed with Bayern, not signed but agreed, and then Dortmund beat him to it. So it's not the first time that Dortmund and Bayern Munich are trying to sign the same guy. And well, I guess we'll see. Do you have any thoughts on this, Stefan?
Yeah, I would only add that, yeah, he has actually been linked to Bayern, not as much as he has to Dortmund, but it's certainly out there. From what I can tell, they're far more interested in Christensen at Chelsea, to the extent that I think that maybe played a part in why Süle has decided to move on. So I would probably go so far as to say he's possibly their main target in the summer. So, but then, you know, Bayern can always Bayern, and then, as you said, they can maybe skip the queue and go for Schlotterbeck. But we don't really tend to see players from mid-table in the Bundesliga move straight up to Bayern, although I'm sure people could probably mention four or five off the top of their head that contradict that point. But it's it would be quite surprising for me, I would say. But you never know. I think Christensen's still probably their main target, though.
I think Little Monster was next. So I already invited him as a speaker. Yeah, shoot, man. If you find the unmute button, that is.
He's probably away making a cup of tea. And he's probably completely forgot.
All right. Should we then move on to Louis, the whatever finance minister, I guess?
It's a Sopranos reference. Hey, gentlemen, good conversation so far. So I just wanted to get your take on the optics of this when you look at Bayern's board's lack of negotiation ability with these expiring contracts. I think it was last week, you know, it was getting rumored that Brazzo was looking at a pretty serious extension with Kahn just outsourcing all of the future transfer decisions to him. I mean, does this change the calculus there at all? Like, how damning is it?
That's a very good question. I think Brazzo and Oli are very good friends, and their relationship is quite tight. I think that Bayern Munich collectively made a decision to walk away from these contract negotiations. And the moment you do that, you lose control over where the player is going, right? And in this case, I think Bayern Munich have made decisions like this in the past. The most famous one is, of course, Michael Ballack, who they went into negotiations, and at the end they couldn't sign. David Alaba is another, right? And Thiago is yet another. And I think, I guess, where your question is going to is this has been happening more and more, which, of course, beckons the question of how, and as far as Salihamidzic able to actually keep this group of players together. And I thought it was really interesting when I spoke to a source about Dennis Zakaria potentially going to Bayern Munich. And they were very interested in him, but only for a summer move, right? And the source told me, yeah, they are interested, but they are very busy trying to keep the players that they have because the salary demands are going up and Bayern Munich have to make all their money themselves, right? And because of that, it's gotten increasingly more difficult for them to keep their players together and the squad together. And I think this isn't necessarily just about Salihamidzic being unable to negotiate contracts, but it also just kind of highlights how difficult the financial situation, even for a big club like Bayern Munich, has been because of COVID. And I think this is probably the narrative that is probably more important in this. I don't know if you want to add anything to this, Stefan.
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic and question because the way that Bayern Munich have kind of evolved in the modern market is that, you know, they're obviously not going to outspend Premier League sides or, you know, the money at PSG, but they have been far more savvy with trying to pick up really good deals when we see them. We've seen a lot of players move from the United States, obviously, Jamal Musiala. We saw them try to pick up Pedri before he moved to Barcelona, for example. So, you know, they are getting far more savvy at picking up players rather than spending 40, 50 million euros on them 5 years later. But obviously the natural consequence of that is that it means that they have the players that they have, but it means whenever the contract negotiations come up, it usually bumps up the wages. And we have seen a kind of natural kind of almost chain reaction throughout the squad over the last 12 months. You know, obviously David Alaba was pushing for big wages to let him go, but Kingsley Coman made similar comments or made similar demands, and he got his made because he's in a position where they think, well, possibly it would cost even more to sign a replacement for him. Coman now has a deal that's probably similar to Sané's. But then the consequence to that is that Serge Gnabry's contract's now up, and now he's pushing for better deals. So, you know, there's obviously advantages and disadvantages to all these things, but to go back to kind of the general question and the optics of all this, I think it's a really good point. I kind of mentioned this earlier on this show, or whatever you want to call it, that I really do think people at Bayern Munich right now would be thinking, we have to go out in the summer and kind of rectify this because, you know, if we're going to put all our eggs in the basket of trying to keep our best players, when we lose them, we then have to basically go out and spend money to replace them or to fill holes in the squad. So it'd be really interesting to see who they bring in, how much money they go out and spend, because I do, as you said, you know, you've just been watching Bayern for the last 12 months or so, and it has been a situation in which they've been trying to consolidate, even the money they have spent on players. Upamecano, the money they spent on him was a preemptive strike to sign him at his release clause before it expired and it went to a bidding war with English teams in the summer. So even that money that they spent, even that huge amount of money they spent in Bayern terms was actually a bargain compared to what he ended up could have costing them. So, you know, it's really interesting how they do kind of fix this problem, because they can't or they won't just go out and spend 50 or 60 million euros on a central defender like perhaps Manchester City or Man United might do.
Yeah, I think the next question came from Nick. So Nick, if you still listening, if you still want to ask, floor is yours.
Yeah, hi guys. Grüß euch. My question is regarding, so this is obviously caught us all by a bit of a surprise. Dortmund going out all in to get perhaps one of the better center backs in the world right now, with a history of more going for the lower or perhaps stars in the future, thinking like Maxi Philipp or Milos Jovic, to go back a really long time. Does this show perhaps a different intent on Dortmund's part, to that there needs to be more money spent, where perhaps waiting a couple of years down the line and pushing it off perennially just isn't going to work? Or is this just something that was, especially in hindsight, really, really necessary?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna start. Hello. And then Stefan, you can add.
Hello.
I think this was just really... Can you just mute, please? Thanks. I think this was very necessary in terms of like adding a player to a position where they had a huge hole, and in Niklas Süle, if you have a player available on a free transfer like him, this is something you need to do, I think, or like you need to pursue. Of course, getting it done is a completely different story, and the fact that they got it done is very much remarkable, because this is a big signing, and Volker Struth is a very good agent, and I suspect that he wanted a sizable sign on, and the salary demands that I've heard are a little bit higher than what has been reported. So I think they are definitely went out, they needed a player, and it's a statement, it's a huge statement. Perhaps to answer your question, it is, and it does go away a little bit of what they have done in the past, for sure, in terms of like maybe finding someone who they can develop. I think they realized that they needed a piece that they can add and will work right away. And I think they did exactly that, and it is a big signing, and it is a remarkable signing. What do you think, Stefan?
Yeah, not a huge amount to add to that, except maybe that obviously Süle isn't your typical profile of player that Dortmund would sign, because he's not exactly one that they're going to train up and try and flog to the Premier League. Even though he is 26, he is technically, you can maybe describe him as a late bloomer because of the nature of his injuries. And, you know, you can maybe go so far as to say there's still more to come of him. So I guess technically he's a player who Dortmund have signed thinking he will get better. But it's exciting and encouraging for Dortmund fans, I think, that he's a kind of player that they're not probably going to try and sell on. A player they would probably try and use to build a squad, build a team around. And that's been something that's been desperately missing for some time now. I think that's probably been the main thing that Dortmund fans have been furious about, since that, yeah, it's all well and good if you can scout the stars of tomorrow, but if you're not going to bring in, you know, a defensive midfielder or, you know, a really rough and tumbled central defender, fullbacks, it's all really for nothing. We have seen some encouraging signs. I think Cobell coming in, goalkeeper, that was really encouraging, because you're obviously talking about, that's a position that Dortmund have, in my opinion, completely overlooked for the best part of 10 years, maybe, or at very least since Weidenfeller left. Süle not only is a very good player who they signed, but he's also a player that Dortmund fans probably don't have to worry about the club selling to Manchester United in a couple of years' time. Maybe they will, who knows, because he'll be 28 by then, he'll be at his prime, maybe he'll be worth selling, I don't know. But it's not... And it's not one that I think Dortmund fans have to worry about. So that's very encouraging in my opinion. So, yeah, not a great player, but also perhaps suggestion that the club are getting very real about the demands of building a squad rather than just a roster of stars of tomorrow?
Hey, I think we have time for one more. And Tilo, I saw you tried earlier. So here you go.
Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, perfectly.
I'm cutting it out. I guess my connection is just too bad. But if you hear me, one guy that I haven't heard much talk about is Michael Zorc. I mean, you want to comment on that for a second? Because that's some savvy business, keeping it quiet all winter transfer and then dropping this little gem just a week later.
Yeah, Stefan, you want to maybe shoot on this one first?
I was quite enjoying the background music there, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know if Tilo wants to just kind of keep playing that music. That was quite relaxing. Yeah, it's a fair point. You know, I think Zorc's been getting a lot of criticism the last couple of years. He's obviously moving on at the end of the year. Again, I mean, I don't know if Tilo heard this at the top of the show, but we were kind of saying that on the podcast, this, you know, if Dortmund were going to sign Sula, today would have been the perfect time to do so because, you know, everyone's furious about the Leverkusen deal. So, again, part of it, I think, is to do with the fact that his agent made certain comments over the course of the weekend. But I think another part possibly is Dortmund saying, hey, look, this is all tied up. Let's just announce it, have some fun, give the fans something to get excited about before the summer. But, yeah, it's a very good point. Zorc's done a great deal getting his deal over the line. It's a big deal for Dortmund. It's a big deal for German football. It's like the transfer equivalent of like a six-pointer, if you want to use that horrendous cliche term. And yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to see what happens there between now and the summer. I don't think Sula's enough. You know, we kind of talked on the podcast this week or the show last night that if I do have some sympathy for Marco Rosa this season, in terms of not blaming him entirely for this team, it's the fact that Dortmund really haven't put their money where their mouth is yet since he's came in. I just really don't think Kobel and Daniel Malin were enough for to take this club, to take this team to a certain level. So Sula's a great step in that direction, but I think if that's the extent of Dortmund's summer moves, then they might find themselves in a similar position next season as they are now. They have to use this and continue to build on it and really build a proper team. And then, you know, I mean, I guess Michael Zorc wouldn't get the credit for that because he's moving on. But then Dortmund could maybe get some proper credit as opposed to just being known as this team that developed the stars of tomorrow for Man United, Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Yeah, I can't add much to it. And to be honest, I also have to get started and get ready for that drive up to Wisla, Stefan. So we should probably wrap it up. But I have one final thought before we wrap it up. And then thank you so much for all the questions. I know there's more. And always shoot us a tweet. My direct messages are open on Twitter too. Shoot us a questions there. We can always answer them on the general podcast. So really, really, really appreciate you guys all listening. But my final thought on this, before we wrap this up, Stefan, what did Dortmund tell Volker Struth and Niklas Süle in terms of what they can win in titles? And what does that mean for Erling Haaland's future? Because one of the things that Struth and Süle will have asked is Haaland staying. And I think that's an interesting narrative.
I may have an answer to that question. So, as you will know, as a youth player, Niklas Süle actually played as a forward. And as anyone who watches the Bundesliga will know, he can't help himself. He absolutely adores running up the pitch, dribbling. You know, as I said in the podcast the other day, he looks like a steakhouse but handles like a bistro. And, you know, he's a forward at heart. Now, what if Dortmund sat down and said, look, as you know, as everyone knows, Haaland is leaving for Real Madrid in the summer. You come in, we'll play you up front next season. maybe that's the masterstroke that Dortmund have been playing there. We're all sitting here playing checkers, they're playing chess. And that's how they've managed to convince him not to move to Chelsea or Barcelona.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
On that note.
On that note, thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back with a regular episode at the end of this week when I come back from skiing. And yeah, this has been fun. We'll probably do this more often when there is breaking news. Thanks again for your questions. And until next time, auf Wiedersehen.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.